If you're looking for the perfect gift, you're covered with a gift that's sure to wow. Taste of Chicago ships Lou Malnati's legendary deep dish pizzas nationwide. Plus, they ship other Windy City favorites too. Visit tastesofchicago.com to order today.
It's thick outside.
It really is. And a little earlier, we could not see out the window here at all.
I still can't really see out the windows here.
It is very thick. So a dense fog advisory is rather an understatement, I guess.
I spend most of the morning looking in people's apartments across the way. I can't see anything today.
Well, that's a hotel over there.
Well, the hotel across the river, but oh, well.
Can't do it today.
Plan B.
Got to find my other ways to amuse myself during the show today.
So this explains the binoculars and the telescope that's been in the studio when you're there.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. What, do you think I was into bird watching? Or astrology?
Well, I thought you might have been looking at some of the boats plying the waters of Lake Michigan, although you can't see that today.
Oh, I've seen some boats over there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know what that means.
Sounded good.
Nice story that you reported about the distribution of the toys.
Yeah.
From the WGN-TV drive-thru toy drive.
Yeah, it was always a wonderful thing to report on. Yeah. And again, 1,200 children receiving gifts. This is something that started almost 30 years ago now in Englewood and has really expanded. You know, 38 of the 50 wards in the city participating. It's amazing.
There's a lot of need.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everyone thinks, you know, everything's okay and everybody's got everything. Everybody doesn't have everything.
No, and more reports of families that may have once been okay, they're not now.
It's not hard to suddenly find yourself homeless or hungry, you know, or any of those things.
Wondering where, you know, if you're going to be able to pay the rent or the pay for the heat.
That's right.
Or medical bills.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. Well, we're happy to help. We do our drive-through toy drive. We did it a couple of weeks ago now, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And it was cold out that day.
It was really cold.
Oh, was that the cold day the other day when you had
Yeah, it was really cold. But we, you know, we stick our heads in people's cars.
To say hi and for warmth.
I'm sure they love that,
too.
Hi, do you know me? I'm Dean Richards.
Yeah. I also got about 15 snow brushes. Love that song. I love that. Remember that from many, many years ago? The 12 Pains of Christmas, it's called?
Yeah, Bob Rivers.
Yeah, exactly.
I've always struggled.
Oops, hello. Yeah. Bob Rivers group, exactly correct.
We used to play that on the hot hits of KC93 down the
Peoria. I was trying to remember what year that was.
It was in the 90s because I was playing it then.
Let's see here. Yeah. Shawnee, do you remember that one?
I do, but I haven't heard it in years. You know, when you say in the 90s.
Early 90s.
Yeah, that's 30 years ago.
Yeah, I can't find the date on this.
Well, I'll see if I can find it here.
But it's, it's a complete album of irreverent twists on Christmas songs. It's called Twisted Christmas, the album.
Twisted Christmas.
And the 12 Pains of Christmas. Bob Rivers Group.
So, 1987.
Whoa.
Oh, wow. Right. Even further back. Okay.
Wow. I think I had hair then. That's how I judge things.
Oh, okay.
BH or PH. happy Sunday, everyone. Thank you for being here.
Drive carefully, though, with this fog if you're out on the roads.
Yeah. What are you supposed to do exactly when it's foggy outside?
Slow down.
I know you got to slow down, but your tendency would be put the brights on.
Right,
because you can't see because it's visibility.
But that can only make it worse.
That makes it worse.
Sure, because it reflects back at you. And it hampers the oncoming drivers in the other lanes.
This is correct.
Yeah.
Oh, there's nothing worse than somebody driving toward you that have their brights on.
Mm. And you see it.
And are there just regular headlights on cars now, which are ridiculously bright.
Oh, yeah.
Bright.
Those intense blue,
I don't know what they're
illuminated
called.
Lights. Yeah, that you see on some cars.
Yeah, it's like laser beams.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they can be, you know, a problem, especially if you have some vision problems and at night. Yeah, that can be a problem as the oncoming as they come toward you.
Everybody just stay home till April. Is that a problem for anyone?
Stay in. Listen to WGN.
Especially right before the holidays.
It's Christmas and the holidays, so stay in.
Yeah. It was crazy outside yesterday. Everyone's doing their Christmas shopping. Traffic was crazy. People were crazy. Everyone was crazy.
And it was raining, too.
And it was raining.
I was inside.
Hmm.
I just stayed in.
What'd you do?
Nothing.
Well, you must have done something.
No, I did. I actually was getting ready for Christmas.
Really?
Wrapping
our presents?
I was doing a little bit of that. What? Wait a minute. Our presents? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Wrapping our... All right. Well, I'll go along with that then. Yes.
I think this would be a nice year for you to buy everyone on the staff a nice, expensive gift this year. Is that a problem?
Oh, well.
Listen, don't go out of your way. A Nordstrom's gift card would be very nice.
Nordstrom's? Yeah. Okay. All right. Fine. I'll see if they have one for a penny candy for you. Because we all like that. I mean, look at the discussions we've had on penny candy.
Oh, don't even get the phone started on that. It's going to blow up the phone lines.
Christmas candy?
I haven't gotten done reading the text from Stephen Johnny show last night. That's always the first thing I do when I come in.
To see what was said overnight.
It's just interesting. The Stephen Johnny have a huge following, and they get calls from all over the country. And there's always some very interesting comments.
Would you care to share some?
Well, here's one. 773, great program, Stephen Johnny. The cars, the date nut, bread, and everything else.
Hmm. Okay.
See, I read these and then I try to figure out
what was said.
What were they talking about? let me see here. 773, the best advice I can give you is to get a jump starter at AutoZone for $220. What that means. Here's one that says, sometimes it's called spray and pray.
Okay.
What could here's that have
new,
been?
Here's a new show segment, out of context
what
texting.
What could that have been? Spray.
Out of context.
What were Steve and Johnny talking about
context,
where the answer was spray and pay?
The answer is... We don't know.
I love this. I love this. 312 area code texted into Steve and Johnny. You can buy mini mashers for small portions of avocados.
Okay.
I could spend the whole show doing this. And I may. We're a little light on content today.
That's going to be my Christmas present for you, spray and pay.
What? What does spray and pay mean?
I don't know. Was it spray and pay or spray and pray?
Let me check. Now.
Spray and pay.
I think, no, pray.
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 Spray and pray.
And pray.
And pray. What does that mean?
I don't know. I'm going to look for that, though. I'm going to gift that for you for Christmas.
What kind of illicit thing is Steve and Johnny running here on Saturday night? Yeah, let's see. Let's do a quick search. Hopefully it's nothing naughty.
While he's doing that, Andy,
yes.
Let's talk about the Bears tomorrow night, right?
Tomorrow night, right.
And you're on with Hamp and OB, is that correct?
That's correct, 6 p.m.
Oh, I think that's fine.
Wow.
That was riveting.
That was a good filler, Schwani.
Are you ready?
That was a good filler.
Okay.
Got his tap dancing shoes on.
Spray and pray is an informal phrase that describes a tactic of taking many actions without careful planning or aiming with the hope that at least one will be successful.
Okay. That can be applied to a number of different things.
I'm going to have to listen to the whole Steve and Johnny podcast now.
See what they actually were talking about.
Yeah, you go back and listen, and then you can figure out what the texts meant.
The texts.
That's what I do during the week. That's what I do in my spare time. I read the texts ahead of time, try to figure out what they were talking about, and then I go back and listen to the podcast.
And then it clicks.
It's like, oh, that's why someone said spray and pray.
Uh-huh.
So that's your project for the week now?
I do that every week.
You do that every week?
Yeah.
Sure you do.
What do you doubt me for?
Sure you do.
I don't sound like a man of conviction.
No, I just, you have a lot of time on your hands anyways. So.
Yes, I have nothing but free time.
Nothing but free time.
Yeah. So we have a big show today.
A moment ago, you said we didn't have a lot of content.
I am a little light on
so
content.
So now we have a big show.
Well, it's what we do have is good.
Okay.
We just don't have a lot of it today. No, I think we have something really good. We've gone through the many, many interviews that we've done for 2024, and we have determined what was our favorite interview of the year. That's a big deal, right?
It is, yeah.
We've had a lot of big interviews
on the radio show or TV?
No, here on the...
On radio, okay.
Here on the Sunday morning show.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I think I'm going to do for 2025? Is I'm going to try to keep a collection of moments between the three of us.
Ooh.
And then have a favorite moment of just us.
Nice.
That would be nice, yeah. I saw Ernie, our production director, the other day, and he said, hey, let me know if you've got any more good things here. I need something for our promos. So,
did you give him anything?
I did. I told him, you know, last week we had a good segment talking about whatever we were talking about.
That memorable.
It was that memorable. But that would be fun also. So you're not going to divulge who the best interview was as yet?
I don't think so.
Okay.
But it'll be coming up at 11 o'clock this morning.
Okay.
So clear your schedules, everyone, this morning. Get done whatever you got to do. Go to an early mass and be back here by 11 so you can hear the best interview that we did, the biggest interview that we did for all of 2024.
Boy, I'm going to have to think about this.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. Any ideas there, Andy?
No, not really. There are so many good ones.
We had a pretty good one here not long ago with Miss Beverly.
Yeah.
From a Romper Room.
Yes, we did.
But how about...
I wonder if that could be it.
How about the special program with the one and only Tom Skilling, who just received a PhD, by the way.
Might be at NIU?
Yeah. Yeah.
I remember that day.
That was a great day.
Maybe that's it.
That was a great day.
Yeah. Could be anything.
Maybe as recent as Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Could be. And by the way, a mental note to myself, as long as you bring up Dwayne The Rock Johnson. Mm-hmm. Mental note to Dean, don't wear shorts on television anymore.
I saw someone wearing the Thursday when it was, you know, brutally cold out.
Yeah.
I saw people wearing shorts.
Yeah.
I just couldn't believe it. It just blew me away.
Some people can't give up summertime.
No.
Although I have to say, not that I wear shorts in cold weather, but my legs don't really get cold.
Yeah, mine either. I like the shorts and the hooded sweatshirt look.
Yeah.
When it's zero out?
When it's like 50 or...
Well, yeah, right. That works.
I'll go a little colder than that. Works. Yeah. I think like into the 30s, it's not...
Okay.
I don't feel like, ooh, my legs are cold.
Okay. You know, well, it's true. That's, you know, there is some truth to that. If you keep your midsection warm... And you wear a hat,
yeah.
You'll be in good shape.
I have automatic warming on my midsection. Nature has provided me all the warming I need on my midsection. But the reason I bring it up, I was looking at some tapes. You know, we went to Hawaii a couple of weeks ago to interview Dwayne The Rock Johnson. And I was dressed in my Hawaiian garb. I had a tropical shirt on. I had shorts, sandals. And I was looking at the tapes, and I said I should not wear shorts on television.
So that's your New Year's resolution now?
Not to wear
shorts. Not to wear shorts on TV?
I don't know if it's my New Year's resolution, but it's something I shouldn't do.
Make a note of that, Andy.
Making a note.
So, you know, if it happens again, we're going to remind you.
It looked like a pair of Bermuda shorts on two fire plugs.
I love your analogies.
Like two fire plugs. I don't have the tone in my legs that I once had. And after, you know, pretty much a whole year, pasty white.
Yeah.
Well, did you do any running when you were in your younger years?
Yeah.
I did. I enjoyed it.
When I was being chased, I did.
Oh, okay. But you were never a runner or a jogger?
I never cared for running. No,
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it.
I was a cross-country runner in high school.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
All-conference, 1983.
Excellent.
Not to brag.
Congratulations. Did you win anything?
Got a nice bright ribbon.
Okay.
For my participation.
All right. Well,
participation trophy?
No. I was in the, I finished in all-conference.
Nice. Yeah. Wow. Yeah, I always hated it. I never cared for running.
No, I enjoyed it. I ended up really? Taking, yeah, well, in college you had to take a certain number of hours of physical education or phys ed, as
we
called it.
I took bowling.
And you took bowling.
Oh, nice.
I took archery.
I really did take a bowling class in college.
Well, that counts. That counts. But I took a running class, I enjoyed it.
Productive use of my tuition money. Taking a bowling class. Idiot.
Did you try to go for a perfect game?
No.
300?
No.
No?
I just thought it'd be an easy class.
And it was.
And it was.
Did you learn how to keep score, maybe?
I learned how to keep score. I learned how to drink beer. Many, many things came out of the bowling class.
Did you go to an alley that had pin setters?
No.
Okay.
No, these were
Or the ones with the overhead projectors where you wrote down the score on a lit
and you could
board
see your,
and you could see it above.
Your handwriting. Up
yeah.
There. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that because you could cheat. Nowadays, you can't do that.
No, you can't do it. Electronic. It's all electronic. Yeah.
Did we ever talk about a Sunday morning show bowling?
Yes, we did.
Outing?
Yes, we did.
That would be fun.
That would be great. That
would be fun.
Yeah. And you know, hear the bowling pins, you know, being hit by the balls in the background.
Man, the action.
That's a great sound, you know.
Okay, go right over there to Waveland Bowl.
There you go.
Or Timber Lanes.
How fun would that be?
Yeah.
We do the show from there. People come and
bowl.
They join us, like, you know, like Tree Time. You come and sit.
That's right.
Join us.
That's right.
Throw a few frames.
And you know what we can
do? You know, there's always a seating area right in front of the lanes there.
Eat some beer nuts.
We can make it a charitable thing, too, like a number of pins, money for a charity.
Ooh.
That way it
Very
would be
good
really
idea.
Worth our while.
A very good idea.
Look at that.
Yep.
Look how we turned what could just be a potentially lazy show into something really productive.
Like a bowl-a-thon or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah I like it.
Just want to get on that, will you?
Okay.
Just want to get on that, will you? Thank you very much for that.
I used to live for Saturday mornings because they had a youth bowling league where I grew up. And, you know, you'd be there with kids your age at a local bowling alley there. It was great fun.
I used to love
That's where I learned to bowl, actually.
Yeah, that's where I learned to eat pizza.
Well, it was in the morning, so we didn't have pizza. But.
Our bowling alley, their Golf Mill Shopping Center, had the best pizza ever.
Oh, is that right?
Oh, so good.
Liked it. Yeah. We had hot dogs.
RC in a can.
Great.
RC in a can with a slice of pizza.
An RC and a slice of pizza.
Oh, that's my goodness.
Right that there. Sausage, cheese.
Whatever they had.
Yeah.
I have to go to the vending machine right now. The far-flung forecast.
Well, thank you very much, Uncle Dean, and good morning, friends. Get out your compasses, protractors, and newfangled devices. We're going up north today to the UP.
Oh, hey, up there.
The UP, yeah.
Let's get some pasties up there.
In Upper Peninsula of Michigan, way up there, and going to an appropriately entitled town for this time of year, Christmas, huh. Michigan. It's near Munising, Michigan, which is close to the home of a national lakeshore up there, Pictured Rocks National Lakeshore. Highly recommended if you get a chance to see that up there.
But that's pretty country up there.
It's beautiful. Christmas has a population of about 400 people. It's on the coast of Lake Superior, and it was named Christmas because a gentleman many years ago set up a factory there to make Christmas ornaments. But it also is an area that receives something like 200 inches of snow every year.
Yeah.
The Upper Peninsula gets some of the most snowfall nationally as well. So they're having a wintry mix today. Don't know about specific accumulation, but definitely getting some snow up there in Christmas, Michigan right now. It's 34 degrees, going up to just 36.
That's it?
That's it.
Nice.
That's it. Christmas, Michigan, for our Christmas holiday cheer.
Do people send their Christmas cards up there to be postmarked?
They might. They might. North Pole, Alaska gets all of that all the time. You know, kids sending letters to the North Pole for Santa Claus and things like that. But not sure if they get the mail up there. It's an unincorporated area, just 400 people. They may not even have a post office.
They have a bowling alley?
No, but they have a Santa's workshop in Christmas. It was started by Julius Thorson, who built the factory there for holiday-themed products in the 1930s. And so hence the name Christmas.
Very nice.
I love it up there. I don't know if I could do the dead of winter up there, but boy, to go up there in the summer and the fall months, it's wonderful.
You know, a friend of mine who I grew up with.
Yeah.
On the south
lives
side.
Lives there.
He moved there from here.
Mm-hmm.
He moved to Rapid River, Michigan. It's in the Upper Peninsula.
Does he live there year round?
He lives there year round.
Wow.
He loves it.
Yeah. Yeah. I have friends in Traverse City, Michigan, which isn't that far, but it's far enough, you know, where they get plenty of snow also.
Yeah.
And they just really enjoy it up there also.
Yeah. Well, for all of our friends in the Upper Peninsula, I raise my cool beverage to you.
Christmas, Michigan. yes, we didn't do our tasting this morning, did we?
Go ahead. What is your sound?
It's like blowing bubbles.
Your sound's gross.
This is a freshly brewed cup of H2O.
Yeah. Mine is H2O.
Mine is H2O with coffee in it.
Oh, okay. All right. Any particular flavoring involved with the coffee? Like a hint of...
Yes, there's a hint of French vanilla.
French vanilla.
Look at you, fancy pants.
Yes. Very nice.
Yes, I bring from home.
Look, I told you we had very little content today. I think we're proving it right now. You're having a holly jolly morning. It's time for the week in health. What's the latest going on that you should be aware of? For that, we go to our pal, Dr. Jeremy Silver. Good morning, doctor. How are you, my friend?
Good morning. How are you, sir?
Doing very, 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 very well. So I'm watching the news this week, as I am prone to do from time to time. And it seems like this week I saw lots of stories about Ozempic or about Ozempic-like products, injectables that people are using to help with weight loss. Some of the stories that I saw were extremely positive about the weight loss. Some have been not so positive about side effects and problems that people are having. I thought to myself, I'm going to ask Dr. Silver about this and see what his opinion is on these injectables that people are using to lose weight. I saw a related story this week that for the first time in like a decade, obesity in the U.S. is down, so I don't know if it's related to that, but it seems like just generally, if there's something that's helping people lose weight, that's a good thing, right?
Oh, I think so. And, I've read some of the same stories. Of course, we're talking about these these GLP agonists like semaglutide and Wegovy and Ozempic are the brand names that help with insulin release and slow the passage of food and just help make people feel more full, and so they eat less. But there's also a ton of other benefits that seem to be associated with these drugs. I mean, even with reduced symptoms of depression, completely eliminating diabetes in many people. So it's, you're right, it's not just the weight loss, but it's general health. And with any drug, there's going to be side effects. And it seems, fortunately, that the side effects are in a smaller proportion of people that are taking them, but there's definitely a lot of what we call GI side effects, where you have tummy aches and nausea and things of that nature, diarrhea perhaps, but also in some instances people having vision problems, particularly diabetics who are taking the medication. So I think that you have to just you have to take everything with a grain of salt and look at the kind of the big picture, and you know, overall it looks like these drugs are going to be hugely important, especially when you see news reports like this weight loss. They looked at the United States, and particularly in the South, there was a large amount of large drop off in obesity, and the thinking was because the South, also the southern part of the United States, also has a higher rate of prescribing these medications. The thought was, well, then it's the medication. There were also a larger number of obese people in the South who died during the COVID epidemic. So there's other things to take into account, but it overall, I think, is promising on a population basis. But when you look at each individual, you have to, that's why you have to really talk to your doctor and have an honest conversation about what the risks and benefits are going to be.
And monitor yourself once you start taking it, if you do. If you feel like you're having some side effects, something, that's another opportunity to talk to the doctor. To bring it up, maybe you continue, maybe you don't. But, if people are having these remarkable weight losses, this is the time of year people are eating like crazy for the holidays. And then after January 1st, they're going to go on all, these diets and start exercising and so forth. That's sort of why I wanted to bring it up now, just to kind of plant the seed about this. What's it like a once a week injection? Is that how that works?
Yeah. And I think, the other thing is, there's a lot of people that I think were looking at weight loss surgery, and now may be able to, dodge, the going under the knife and all of the associated, complications that can be with, associated with surgery. So, they're just, It's definitely it's going to be important. It's going to be an important drug. I don't think it's going away anytime soon. Some of these drugs are actually available as oral tablets as well, not just injectables.
Hmm. Yeah, I think I might have a problem injecting myself. I know that's been around for a long time, where people have done that for a variety of treatments. I think I would be a little squeamish to inject myself. Is it a difficult thing? It's obviously not a difficult thing for people to do to themselves if, people are doing it all the time, I guess.
Well, these needles, Dean, they are tiny. I mean, and to even say tiny, I don't think does it justice. I mean, it's almost like a mosquito bite. And then there's teaching that the nurses and these clinics can do to help you kind of learn how to get over the needle phobia and how to do it safely and without pain.
All right. Well, something to talk to your doctor about. Let's get Joel. You're on with Dr. Jeremy Silver, rather, on WGN. Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, I'm 85 years old. And we all know about tests that you should begin, like colonoscopies, when you're in your 40s, et cetera. But when do some of these tests, the digital exam, colonoscopy, when should those things stop? Because I'm 85 years old. How long, what should be ended?
Yeah, is there a time?
That's a great question.
Is there a time when you don't need to do all that anymore?
Yeah, I think... that's a great question, and it really comes down to personal preference and having a, you know, a real conversation with your physician. You know, some folks, when they get to this stage in life, you know, they're really more interested in quality of life as opposed to quantity of life. And if I'm reading between the lines, perhaps the listener is kind of alluding to that.
Yes.
You know, certainly there's things like checking your kidney function and you know, screening basic labs, your sugar, your kidneys, and cholesterol and things like that can be useful and important. And there may be very easy interventions that are available, you know, for blood pressure or things of that nature, which you'd be more than willing to entertain. By the same token, like you say, colonoscopy, I just personally, you know, depends on your history, of course, but I'm not certain all those tests are necessary, as you indicated.
But what about the digital thing? You know, I think you know what I mean when
the old-fashioned prostate exam, which, doctor, I don't think I've had a digital exam in quite a long time. Everything is done with blood tests, at least from my doctor lately.
Well, I think, you know, that you can certainly defer that exam. And you're right. The blood tests have by and large, taken over in terms of diagnosing prostate cancer. But I would say that there can be benefits for some folks. You know, you can, as a physician, without getting too graphic, you can palpate the prostate with the finger. It's called the digital rectal exam, and you can detect certain abnormalities. Now, it's not 100%, and therefore, if you're not comfortable with it, I think just having a chat with your physician and saying, "Hey, look, I'm going to take a pass this year," and I think most physicians would say, "Hey, no problem."
Yeah, although I hear stories all the time of guys who are getting prostate cancer. And is it worth the couple of moments of being uncomfortable as opposed to not finding something that might have been found in a more thorough exam? I don't know. Same with some of these other exams that are, you know, difficult. You don't want to do them, whatever. Is it worth, not finding something that's much more difficult? Colonoscopy's no, you know, walk in the park, but I'd rather have that than a diagnosis of you have colon cancer.
Sure. And Dean, just to be clear for your listeners, a very different conversation with an 85-year-old gentleman who's, you know, making decisions at that stage than someone, you know, say their 50s or 60s.
Yeah, I get that. Okay, I get that. Well, Joel, good luck with everything. Have a talk with your doc and see what happens there, okay?
Thank you very much.
Appreciate your call. Thank you very much. 312-981-7200. Let me see here. 407 area code says, Dr. Silver, would you recommend mask wearing for upcoming Christmas gatherings, or are we past that now that people are immunized?
Great question. You know, this is a very personal decision. There's a social implication of wearing a mask. I can tell you that when I'm in the hospital, I wear one because I simply don't want to get sick because I don't like feeling unwell. And, you know, looking at the latest flu levels, we're starting to reach, in some parts of the U.S., higher activity. And flu is certainly something that I'm trying to avoid. So it really comes down to an individual choice. I can say that masks are very effective at reducing the risk of spread of respiratory illnesses, and we are right in entering into the peak of what is classically viewed as respiratory season. So if you want to wear it and you don't have a problem with that, I think it's going to be helpful to prevent illness for sure.
But probably if you have a weakened immune system, if you've got certain conditions that make you more likely to get influenza or COVID or something like that, it's probably not a terrible idea to wear a mask.
Not at all. You know, and let's not forget that, people are going to be bringing their newborns around, and, the young child's immune system is not the same as somebody in their, in the prime of life. And likewise, as you indicated, you know, you never know whose grandmother is undergoing chemotherapy, for instance.
Right.
So it certainly doesn't hurt.
Thank you very much for your text, 630 area code. If Ozempic helps someone lose weight, do they need to stay on it for life in order to stay fit?
Yeah, that is one of the great questions of this this whole discussion. It would appear that those who go off it, meaning the folks that start it, decide it's not right for them and then stop it, the weight tends to come right back. Because it basically is a hormone. You know, it's mimicking a hormone in the human body. And so if you take away the hormone signaling, then all the cascade of cellular effects from that hormone are going to go away. So that's definitely something to consider when you're jumping on the bandwagon is, you know, you're pretty much committed. Now, that's not to say there won't be other opportunities to improve weight loss over time, but at least right now, that's definitely a risk.
847 area code says, ask Dr. Silver if the RSV vaccine needs to be taken yearly or is it a one-time shot?
Yeah, the RSV, from what I understand, and I've done a little research on this, it's a one-time shot, and then you're done. Now, I don't know how long it persists, so I don't want to give guidance on, you know, whether 10 years from now you might need a booster. And guidance can sometimes change on that. So I would just say, talk to your doctor. But yeah, my understanding is it's not an annual shot. It's a one-time shot.
Dr. Jeremy Silver is the medical director of emergency medicine at Northwestern's Kishwaukee Hospital. Hope you have a great Sunday, Doc. Thank you for joining us, as always.
Sure. Thank you. It's my pleasure. Take care.
Well, in the previous hour of today's program, we mentioned the possibility of taking the show out on the road and doing the show from a bowling alley.
Yes.
Because we think that would be fun.
It would be.
And the text line just blew up.
Not surprised.
People who want to come bowling with us.
All right.
That would be great.
Yeah.
And you know, Andy could do play-by-play with the various teams.
Sure.
I like that.
847 area code said, Dean, how about at the old Southport lanes? Well, that would be fun and fine, except the Southport lanes are gone.
Yeah,
chicken restaurant.
That's
a chicken restaurant.
That was so much fun. You know, when I mentioned to you.
They had the manual pin setters.
They had the pin setters. Yep. I loved that place.
Had a good burger there, too, by the way.
They did have good
food.
Good burger,
pulled
good
pork
nachos.
Too.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
That's a job I would have liked to have had.
Pin setter?
Pin setter. Yeah. You just like, sit around up there all night, right?
And we don't sit around. You know, you have to pick up the pins
and
reset
them. Back up,
yeah.
That's easy. I used to bowl every Saturday morning at Habitler Bowl. Habitler. A lot of people said that they would go bowling every Saturday morning. I did, too.
I loved it.
Southport, or wait, not Southport, Stars and Stripes.
Oh, yeah.
Bowling alley on the south side.
Yeah, I was at Golf Mill Bowl and also Classic Bowl in Morton Grove.
773 area code says, do you remember the TV show Bowling for Dollars?
Yeah, sure.
I've heard of it, but I don't think I've ever seen it.
And we had a bowling show on WGN. Ten-pin Tattler. Yeah. The Ten-Pin Tattler.
We don't get enough bowling news on WGN anymore.
And, you know, back
in
the day.
Can you incorporate that into your newscast on Sunday from now on?
What's that?
Bowling.
Bowling news.
Bowling? Oh, sure. And back in the day, ABC Wide World of Sports would have bowling tournaments from time
Chris
to
Schenkel
time.
And
Chris Schenkel did them? Yeah.
That I remember.
Yeah.
Dean, I'm all in for bowling. Like Schwanee, I bowled every Saturday as
a kid.
That's right. See, here's another one.
Yep.
Last week I bowled 148, 153, and 206.
Nice.
Hey.
That's pretty good.
That's a very good score.
What was your high score?
That good.
What was your high score?
I think I had a perfect game once.
Did you?
Really?
Yeah.
But mostly I stunk.
Okay.
Yeah, I would say for me, maybe 125, 130, Something like that.
My high game was a 229.
Ooh. Wow.
Yeah, but I was more of a 150 to 160 kind of bowler.
Did you have your own shoes?
I did not have my own shoes, but my grandfather bought my brother and I our own bowling balls.
Oh, you had your own. Okay. Yeah.
Wow, that's fancy.
And did you use a bowling ball at the alley?
Bowling ball at the alley.
Yeah.
I did.
Yeah, we had...
I'm just trying to think of how many diseases I must have picked up sticking my fingers in those disgusting holes.
It was not clean.
Didn't think about it back then. But you know what was the real draw for me to go bowling? Hmm. You're going to love this, Dean. You won a record at the end of the day.
What do you mean you won?
A 45 RPM record.
If you got a certain
score? If you got a certain score.
Really?
Yep. And I won a record of the Batman theme. I was racing home
you
with that.
You are so weird. Do you still have it?
Yes.
Of course you
do. Of course I do.
Of course you do.
Of course he does.
I was yelling in the middle of the alley, and everybody was looking at me like, yeah, we know he's weird now. Yeah,
we never had that. We never had that. We bowled. They had a lot of pinball games at the bowling alley.
Oh, yeah. Game rooms were big back then, too.
Played a lot of pinball. And ate a lot of junk food.
Yeah. Andy, you said you had pizza at yours.
Oh, yeah.
They had a little snack bar off to the side that had amazing hot dogs, those steamed buns, you know. With the ones that were on the rollers? Yeah.
The hot dogs?
Yeah.
You see at 7-Eleven now.
Right. But these
that look so fresh at 7-Eleven now.
And you could eat a half a dozen of those and a big bag of fries and with a huge Coke and not gain any weight.
Nope. Try that now.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that what you ate when you were a kid? 7 or 8 hot dogs?
Sure. Just went back. They were 75 cents.
Yeah, that's a bargain. Yeah, those were the days. Get on the streetcar for a nickel. Yeah, those were the days.
Told the ancient Yuletide carol. Fa la 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 la.
I could listen to that Nat King Cole Christmas album over and over and over again. One of the greatest of all time.
I got it out the other day.
Actual vinyl.
Yep. Bought it years and years ago.
Yeah.
Still in good shape, though, and it doesn't get old.
Such a fantastic... I mean, he's amazing. Songs are amazing. The orchestration is amazing. It's just great. It's just one of the greatest Christmas...
albums out there.
Jim. Compositions of all time. You know what I heard... driving in this morning, Ella Fitzgerald, Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas.
Oh, yeah. That's on her album, Ella Wishes You a Swinging Christmas.
Swinging Christmas.
Yeah.
That's a good one, too.
It sure is.
That's a good one.
Only two of the greatest singers there, right?
Very true. Very true. But what I've, what the observation that I make every year is that at Christmas time, it allows us to hear certain artists that at other times of year, we would be way too hip to ever listen to.
So that's why you hear Nat King Cole and Ella?
Not so much Nat King Cole and Ella, but when have you ever put a Perry Como album on?
I don't have one.
I heard Perry Como singing, whatever Christmas song. Very nice. It's very nice and sets the mood. He had a beautiful voice. I wish I knew more about Perry Como. I kind of remember his old TV show a little bit.
Yeah, that goes back.
It does.
The TV show.
Yeah, but he was a phenomenal singer, Perry Como.
I heard that he actually was a barber very young.
I do remember that.
He was a barber and worked for a band and gave haircuts to the men that were in, during the big band era. Would give them haircuts and would sing, perhaps, while he was doing it. And several of them said, you have a good voice there, sir.
Yeah.
And one thing led to another.
You know, it's funny you should mention that, because for 2025, I'm going to start doing that on this show.
What, being a barber?
Yeah, giving you guys haircuts.
So, does that mean that we're obligated to give you a haircut also?
No, not really. Not unless you want to.
No, I don't. Thank you.
It wouldn't take long.
No, it certainly wouldn't.
Wait a minute. Yeah, but I thought you'd never get to hear Perry Como. You hardly ever get to hear the Carpenters, and they have a fantastic Christmas album.
Well, that was a big song. What was it? Merry Christmas, Darling?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas.
Perry Como.
Everywhere you go.
Listen to this guy.
Take a look in the 5 and 10. Glistening once again.
What a beautiful voice he's got, right?
Silver lanes aglow. It's beginning to look
Bing Crosby did this song, too.
You know, Bing Crosby did everything.
Yeah.
Bing Crosby's classic. You know, Johnny Mathis, an artist that you hear all the time at Christmas, and he sounds great, but you rarely hear during the year, during the rest of the year.
He still does a Christmas show, I think.
I was wondering about that, because he's got to be, I don't want to...
80-something?
I'll bet he's older than that.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Mid-80s, perhaps.
Let's see. I was going to guess until you said that. I was going to guess close to 90.
Wow.
Let's see. I might be wrong. I've been wrong before 20. He's 89 years old.
Is that right? 89.
Johnny Mathis.
Dave Plyer had him on a few years ago talking about, well, his career and, of course, the Christmas album. You know another singer, the late now Andy Williams, his Christmas album. Yeah. There's another singer that we're ordinarily too hip to listen to, you know, for the, you know, rest of the year. But that song, it's the most wonderful time of the year.
It's a classic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's a classic. Isn't that
great arrangement, too, there.
Isn't that a Johnny Mathis Christmas hit also?
He did it, yes. Andy Williams also did it.
Or it's the most wonderful time of the year.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That might be on Johnny's Christmas album also. Barbara Streisand did a Christmas album.
I heard her version of Jingle Bells.
Yeah. You didn't like it?
No, it's just different. That's
yeah, I think I you know what remember, I'm talking about? I have a vague memory of it. Yeah, it's been a long
and
time
then
since
you
I've heard
got upsot. Upsot. Yeah, she says she's got some beautiful Christmas songs also. Some nice ones out there besides nothing against Mariah Carey. I like the Mariah Carey song.
Oh, I had that in my head the other day, and it just kept looping around.
Yeah, there's some very, very, very nice Christmas songs.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And
I'm trying to think what would be my favorite one, though.
You know, the Nat King Cole familiar version of the Christmas song that's on that album there is actually the second version that he did. He did one in 1946 with his trio, with just a guitarist and a bass player.
Instrumental?
No, he sings it. He sings it. It's a piano, bass, and guitar. Oh,
very simple, without all the orchestration.
With all the strings and everything else in there. Yeah, right. Very different sound. It's the same song. You'll recognize it right away, but very different sound with just that small grouping of instruments.
I happened to get up early. Maybe it was yesterday morning. I can't remember. But recently, I watched an old Jack Benny rerun on Antenna TV, our sister station, Antenna TV. And the guest star was Nat King Cole.
Oh, really? Yeah.
And he sang a couple of songs, and he did a couple of sketches with Jack and the whole crew. It was very funny.
Yep. But he had quite a TV show.
That was a good
Nat
TV
King,
show.
Nat King Cole's show.
But think about Nat King Cole. I mean, think about this. Nat King Cole variety show must have been the late 50s, right?
That's right.
For a black man to have a variety show.
It was the first one.
That's remarkable.
Yeah.
And for Jack Benny.
To have him
on as a
guest.
Featured guest.
Yeah.
Benny's show must have been late 50s, early 60s. That was pretty progressive also.
Yep. I don't remember. Benny, I believe, was on CBS. I don't remember what network carried Nat King Cole, though.
Yeah, I don't remember that either.
Yeah.
But what a talent.
Those were great days. I'll tell you. Those were just great days.
They were.
Jack is now asleep in the producer's booth, right?
Oh, Jack.
Are you there?
Jack, turn the volume off. Jack turned the volume off. He's listening to Korean supergroup BTS. He hasn't heard a word that we've said on the show today. Producer Jack.
Jack missed my 45 RPM story last week, too.
I'll listen to it on the podcast.
Okay, I'll take your word for it.
I wish I could use that excuse. So still to come on the program today, we've got coming up in a few minutes, we're going to play back a couple of A-list interviews that I did this week. Edward Norton did his first major motion picture here in Chicago for the movie Primal Fear. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic movie. It was his very first movie. Now he's in this new Bob Dylan movie.
He's in the Dylan movie?
He plays Pete Seeger.
What?
In this new Bob Dylan movie, A Complete Unknown.
Whoa.
That opens on Christmas Day.
Oh, we're definitely going now.
Oh, he's great as Pete Seeger in this motion picture. I'll bet he might get nominated for an Academy Award for that performance that he does. He's really good. And Timothy Chalamet, forget it.
Yeah.
As Bob Dylan, all the music in this movie is fantastic. I talked with Edward Norton. We'll share that interview coming up in a few minutes. And are you familiar with the horror movie Nosferatu? Have you ever heard of it?
The one that was the silent movie version?
That was one of the first movies
in the 20s?
Ever made in the 1920s. I think 1920.
That's pretty scary.
426. It is.
That's pretty scary. The image of that. Oh, yeah.
Yes, yes. Well, they have remade Nosferatu with Willem Dafoe starring in the movie. And I talked with Willem Dafoe about that. We're going to get to that coming up after 10:30 this morning. We're going to shuffle things around a little bit today. But then at 11 o'clock, our favorite interview of the year. Of all the interviews, all the A-listers I talked to this year, all the big Hollywood hot shots, my favorite interview of 2024. It's coming up after 11 o'clock today.
I am anxious about this Nosferatu, Willem Dafoe doing it. I still, the Bela Lugosi, portrayal is great, but I also thought Gary Oldman was amazing.
Yes.
Remember the Gary Oldman version of Dracula?
Yeah.
Early 90s, I think.
Yeah, well, Nosferatu is really the early Dracula story.
Mm-hmm.
It's Dracula before there was Dracula.
Yeah, right.
And now Gary Oldman was very, very good in it. And now they're going back to this original Nosferatu. I want to say 1926.
That's about right.
Might be wrong.
And I think it was a foreign film, a German film.
It's correct.
Yeah. 26.
It's correct.
Yeah.
And there are some really scary images. And I mean, considering it's literally one of the first movies that were ever made, the film technique, how they made it, the use of shadow and sound.
The black and white technique.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. It was quite amazing. And this other movie, which also opens on Christmas Day. Hey, let's take the whole family to go see a movie on Christmas Day about Dracula. I'll bet it's going to do well.
Wonderful entertainment.
That's right. So all that's coming up after 10:30. And we've got our number one interview of the whole year coming up after 11 o'clock today.
All right. I'm still trying to take a guess as to who it might be.
Yeah, well.
You're going to keep us in suspense, I take it.
I am milking this for as long as I possibly can.
Well, in the meantime, I have a newsroom to run, so I have to get ready for 10:30.
Yeah, who needs you then? One of the classics of all time. How does it feel? The great Bob Dylan. Like a Rolling Stone. How does it feel? Timothy Chalamet stars as Bob Dylan in the upcoming movie that's opening on Christmas Day called A Complete Unknown. It is not Bob Dylan's entire life story, but the pivotal time in the early late 50s, early 60s, when he was making his mark on folk music, starting off as a folk singer, getting a break from none other than another folk great, the great Pete Seeger. And if you're not familiar with Pete Seeger's music, he was a master of the banjo, a teacher, an activist, who sounded something like this.
If I had a hammer, I'd hammer in the morning, I'd hammer in the evening, all over this land. I'd hammer out danger, I'd hammer out a warning, I'd hammer out love between my brothers and my sisters all over this land.
Yeah, songs of meaning, songs of hope. That's what Pete Seeger specialized in. Both, he is also featured prominently in this new Bob Dylan movie as really sort of the guy that not exactly discovers Bob Dylan, but gives him an opportunity to perform in front of audiences just before Bob Dylan's career just really took off like a rocket. I am very definitely going to be giving this movie a positive review when I do review it next week, just before it opens on Christmas Day. But in the meantime, I wanted to share some of my interviews that we have done with the cast of this movie. Last week, we shared my one-on-one conversation with Timothy Chalamet. And this week, I wanted to share my conversation with the great Ed Norton. Edward Norton, who is an Academy Award nominee, has been in so many great movies over the years. Now this one, and one of the things that I was interested in is how he researched this role, because Pete Seeger, I mean, for a considerable number of people, is a pretty familiar person, familiar character. How does he go about portraying such a well-known person?
All the normal stuff. Probably the thing I was reflecting on earlier with someone who was 20 years ago. I think if you wanted to go find like Pete Seeger's Rainbow Quest folk show on New Jersey public television, you probably have to like go to the Museum of Film and Television and dig that stuff up, and it's all on YouTube now. It's kind of astonishing how much you can take a dive into someone like Pete Seeger's life. I mean, you can find obscure clips of him playing We Shall Overcome in a Berlin studio in 1963. I mean, it's the access to a well-documented life like Seeger's is not not that much of a challenge anymore. It's there's an abundance of it, and that's great. That part's straightforward, such as it is. But more challenging is just, I think part of what's amazing about Pete Seeger, about Bob Dylan, about Joan Baez is they are real illusionists. They make very simple, a person and a guitar, a person and a banjo. They make it look really effortless, and they make it look simple. And when you get down into trying to do what they do, and you realize how hard it is to, Pete Seeger would play a song, teach the audience the song, sing the harmony to the song, and conduct with his left hand while playing banjo, and he makes it look easy. And then you try to do it, and you realize, man, this is the product of years and years and years of development as a performer, and fluidity, and that's when the fear starts rising in you about trying, the audacity of trying to like imitate these people.
Yeah, well, you from what I could tell, seeing many videos through the years, you captured them pretty well. I wonder if you drew any parallels between his life as an activist and yours. You also, have been very active, somewhat as he has, through the years. Did that ring a bell with you?
He was very specifically inspiring to a lot. I mean, Mark Ruffalo and I both we're New York theater actors who have environmental, you know, kind of concerns and advocacy. And, you know, Pete was, he started the project to clean up the Hudson River as early as the late 60s. He was a legend in New York artistic circles as an activist across, you know, many dimensions. But by the time of our young lives coming up in New York, he was the linchpin of local environmental advocacy. And so it's not even, you know, it's not even like see the, he was a very specific elder statesman of a lot of what a lot of us cared about. He was kind of the great example of the person who used his platform as an artist to advocate. And you know, I didn't have to really
dig too deep.
That was pre-existing. I had that view of him, and he was an inspirational figure to many of us.
Right. Just one last thing. I remember so well when you shot Primal Fear in Chicago. Do you have memories of that? It was a long time ago, but I got to think that you must have a few Chicago memories from that.
Yeah. I remember mostly just that it was, you know, I have sort of, you know, that was the first film job I did. It was the first film project I worked on. And so the stuff that we did in Chicago is full of, it has a certain romance to me just because it was the thrill of,
yeah,
the thrill of being on a movie set. And I can remember, you know, it wasn't a lot. We did some outdoor, we did outdoor scenes, we did scenes. But I just remember the thrill of arriving there, you know, and kind of walking around in the cold, excited at kind of the unknown and the possibility of
sure
of it all. It was a special time. It was a great time, you know.
Yeah, he was so good in that movie, Primal Fear. And he is great in this new Bob Dylan movie, A Complete Unknown, co-starring along with Timothy Chalamet and Elle Fanning, co-stars in the movie. The actress Monica Barbosa plays Joan Baez in the film. She's great. I'll tell you much more about it before it opens on Christmas Day. I will be giving it a terrific review. Tell you that much right now. It is 10:47, and when we come back from the break, let me tell you about the new version of Nosferatu, the 1922 movie. I was wrong. I thought it was 1926. It was actually 1922 when this German silent film came out. One of the very first movies that were ever made, certainly the first horror movie, now being remade with Willem Dafoe among its castmates. All of that and more is coming right up. The music of the motion picture Nosferatu, 1922 German expressionist silent film, considered to be, you know, one of the classics of all time. It starred Max Schreck as Count Orlok, a vampire who preys on his wife and brings plague to their town. You watch this movie. It's available to see on, I believe it's on Netflix, but it's very easy to find on YouTube and other places. Even though this movie is over 100 years old, came out in 1922, I guarantee you it's still one of the creepiest movies that you will ever see. With the visuals, the use of lighting, the use of music throughout the movie. It's all being remade now. And I haven't seen Nosferatu yet, the new one. But I'm very much looking forward to seeing it and what they do with it. I know it's got a terrific cast. It is Willem Dafoe, who is one of the main characters in the new version of the movie. Bill Skarsgård plays Count Orlok now. Lily Rose Depp, Johnny Depp's daughter, is featured. Young British actor Nicholas Holt is in the movie. Aaron Taylor Johnson. It's got a really good cast. And from what I've seen so far of a few scattered clips here and there, it looks pretty creepy and pretty scary. You know, if Willem Dafoe is attached to it, he loves a movie like this. He loves a character like this that he can really dig his teeth into virtually, literally. We had a nice chat with Willem Dafoe about his role in the movie, and also Nicholas Holt, who was also with him. But one of the things that we started off with for Dafoe was how this movie is going to be different from what we saw back in 1922.
Well, many things are different, and I'll just try to remember what Robert really said about it, because I've heard him talk about it. He saw the original film when he was 9 years old, and he was quite taken by the look of it, by the performance of Max Schreck. And it's something that he's always been thinking about. In fact, he did a play of it in high school and then did a semi-professional production of it after that. It really is very connected. It's a passion project of his. And then about 10 years ago, he tried to get this film done. He wrote the script then. It's probably changed very little from that time. The thing that he said that I think is interesting is that it's not enough to be obsessed with something. You have to have a reason to do the retelling. And he found that by telling the story through Ellen, Lily Rose's Depp character, through her eyes, would be interesting and would give more psychological and emotional power to it. That's a huge difference. And then just the fact that it's a Robert Eggers movie, a guy that really knows how to make a period film feel very present.
Yeah, Nicholas, talk to me a little bit about the actual making of this movie. I mean, is it pretty much the way that you would make any movie, or when you're doing a movie that's, you know, a little scary, a little creepy, do those elements come into it while you're actually making the movie?
The process on this was very different. As Willem was saying, Robert's process is masterful in his filmmaking. His approach is very, you know, technical in terms of how he's going to transport you into that world. So him and Jaron, his DP, have designed kind of longer shots and takes to take you through the story and understand which character they want to be focusing on and different elements. And it becomes a choreography between all of us as actors and the camera and the sets and everything else that's taking place, you know, in front of the camera in real time. And that's one of the things that's, you know, brilliant to work within those parameters, because then you get a real sense of what it is that's driving the story in that moment, how to build the tension perhaps, and what is needed from your performance in those moments. And he's also very clear in what he needs. So it's a different process to, you know, when you do a film with lots of cameras and angles, but you do a couple of takes and then they kind of make it work in the edit perhaps, in choosing what they want from each take. But I think that's what's special about the film in terms of the making and also the viewing, because it's a masterpiece technically. Watching the film, it really transports you and kind of magnetically pulls you into this story and world, because it's so beautiful and unrelenting in a way.
Yeah, Willem, you love making movies like this, it seems. The more eclectic, the more a little bit out there, the better. It just seems to have your name written all over it.
Well, I just, you know, I think I like when stories are told that really give you another view, a point of view that's not celebrated, that's not familiar. Yeah, one of the best things movies can do is have us experience something outside of our experience or outside of our consideration. It can make us, it can challenge our thinking, it can challenge our social conditioning. So I like that, because I feel movies can elevate you. They can give you a new look at your life and the way things work in the world. That's a power. And so I like to be involved in movies that have that possibility, rather than movies that just reassure us you have a cathartic experience and you walk out, but you haven't thought about anything because you've had a good cry. I think you can do both. You can have the cathartic experience. You can have an emotional connection to it. But also, movies should be, you know, as Lars von Trier says, like a stone in your shoe. It's something that you got to figure out. You know, something to work with, something to challenge you.
Willem Dafoe. The movie is Nosferatu. It opens on Christmas Day around the Chicago area, and I'll give you my full review on it then. Pretty cool hearing some Pete Seeger, right? In the previous half hour
of
the show.
Exactly. Did just a quick question, though. Pete Seeger got into a lot of trouble in the 1950s with the House Un-American Activities Committee, the so-called, the McCarthy era stuff. Was that brought up at all, do you know, in the movie?
I'm trying to
remember. Dylan came after that, so maybe that was,
Dylan was much after that, but they definitely referred to his extreme activism throughout the movie.
Yeah.
I mean, he was like the original, one of the reasons that folk music dealt with the issues of the day.
Very much so.
Because of guys like Pete Seeger writing songs like If I Had a Hammer and We Shall Overcome. And, so many others.
Well, you remember, they mentioned Joan Baez in the Woodstock album, her appearances on that. You know, it was nothing but social commentary.
Yeah, well, I mean, she is very predominant in this movie. The actress Monica Barbosa plays Joan Baez in this movie. Sounds just like her, but, I mean, her songs are, in the early, especially the early days of pure folk music, we're very, very moving. It's a really good movie.
Can't wait to see it.
Plus, I can't get enough banjo music. That may be my New Year's resolution.
You want to take up the banjo?
I want to learn to play the banjo.
Call Steve Martin.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I was thinking...
What?
I was thinking more like on the Andy Griffith Show with the Darlins.
Oh, yes.
Where they would play the band. They'd play a song and... Hey, fire up the songs, boys.
You can learn keep your money in your shoe and it won't get wet.
Don't play that song. That one makes me cry.
How great would this be to be if I was playing this live after I learned how to play the banjo? And then I could serenade you guys every week.
Oh, lovely. Yeah. Lovely. Just lovely.
Could do an all-request hour.
Swanee could play the jug.
I'll play the washboard.
And you could play the washboard.
Play the washboard. Oh, someone needs to play the fiddle.
Oh, that's Jack's job.
Jack Hammer, you're the fiddle player.
Boy, that's extra good.
That's extra good. Foggy Mountain Breakdown. How do you not love banjo music? It's so happy.
Yes, it is.
Except for the Deliverance.
Yeah.
Well, there's that.
There's that.
There's always the exception to the rule.
There's that.
There's always that. That angle of it. It's not so good. Wait a second here. Hang on one second. I just want to...
I thought we were going to do the... Best interview of 2024.
There we go.
Oh, wow. Dueling banjos.
This is when Swanee and I do a banjo duet. You're going to learn to play the banjo also, Swanee.
Okay. This was a big hit, as you recall.
We're going to take this out on the road. The banjo. Dummies.
We'll do this when we do the show at the bowling alley.
Hey, we have a lead that this actually might happen.
Yes, we do.
I know. Oh, a key change there. How about that?
I'm having like a little bit of a nightmare that there may be some dialogue from the movie that we don't
know. No, if that's the instrumental version, there won't be.
I hope so. 1972, by the way.
Was it 72?
Yep.
Okay.
John Voight, Burt Reynolds, Ned Beatty. Who are the guys that played the banjo? Do you know?
I don't remember. It wasn't the Darlings.
Eric Weisberg, Steve Mandel were the band.
Here's where it picks up now.
Yeah.
Get the jug going.
Here we go. You're wondering what 2025 is going to sound like on this show?
Sneak
Here's
preview.
Your preview. So stupid. Over the weekend, Mr. Tom Skilling became Dr. Tom Skilling. Tom was given an honorary doctorate at Northern Illinois University.
And he was in the entire formal dress to receive the degree
Full robes.
Yeah, and the hat.
The whole deal, yeah. Very, very, very deserving. NIU said that Tom was selected for distinguishing himself in his field as a passionate broadcaster, educator, trailblazer, and advocate for climate awareness. He also mentored so many NIU students as interns in the WGN weather office who petitioned the university to get this, you know, to give Tom this great honor. So congratulations to Tom. That's a fantastic thing. Did you hear that Tom, who retired in February, by the way, is going to be back on WGN on a limited basis? He's going to be doing special stories from time to time.
Yeah, I knew it was only a matter of time before he would resurface.
Well, now he can concentrate on, you know, things, you know, like really take a deep dive into climatological type stories. So he'll, you know, still be able to do that. I'm not surprised he couldn't just completely walk away from it, but good for him. Congratulations to him. And he was in the office the other day. It was really nice to see him. And that is our biggest interview of 2024.
I knew it.
The morning that we spent with Tom Skilling just before he retired, he came all the way downtown and spent 2 hours with us here in the studio talking about his career, what's next, retiring. Going to share that interview with the great Tom Skilling, our favorite of 2024, next. 11:20, this is Dean Richards, Sunday morning on WGN. We go back for the best of 2024. We bring you some of the top A-listers in the world every week on this show. But my favorite interview that I did this year came in February after the news of Tom Skilling announcing his retirement as chief meteorologist on WGN. Tom Skilling was nice enough to come in studio with us that morning. He spent a couple of hours talking and reminiscing and taking calls from you. Tom, we've been saying that we were going to do this.
I know.
Probably for about most of those 45 years to come and be on the radio show like this. And, you know, life gets in the way and things come up.
Doesn't it?
But here you are.
You know what, Dean? Well, first of all, I've been down here to the radio station since the move was made to this facility only once.
Yeah.
And it was a couple of years ago. And I was trying to think what I was here for. We were feeding something to the Weather Channel, some audio or something, and found out the best way to do it was through here. But what a studio. I you know, your listeners ought to see what we're looking at here. We overlook the Chicago River and Lake Michigan, and it's a gorgeous day. And Dean, to be with you, I'll tell you something. You know, we've talked about getting together for dinner.
Yep.
And we haven't done that. Maybe we'll start doing that now.
Well,
a little more time.
Yeah, you take Tom, who starts, he wakes up and he's on the computers working on his weather, and I'm in California or New York or, you know, someplace. Interviewing.
You are the hardest working person in this business. I don't know how you do what you do. You're up in the morning on the morning show, which in and of itself is a phenomenon, that broadcast phenomenon that you guys all produce in the mornings. And Dean, my gosh, you're previewing movies and all, and flying all over the universe.
Well, I say that only that's why we haven't had time. And
yeah.
I think that's why this is part of my bittersweet feeling about you retiring. I'm so happy for you that you'll be able to relax a little bit. Of course, we're going to miss you on the air tremendously. Nobody does it like you, but I'm so happy that you'll be able to do things now. You'll have time to do things that you want to do and that make you happy. I hope that's what's going to happen.
Dean, this is strange, uncharted territory for me. I've worked since I was a teenager, and the idea of not working and having a regular routine is very strange. I don't know how this will all work out. It's a work in progress. But, Dean, I'll tell you, I started having some vertigo spells a couple months ago, and the traffic driving in, I start in the morning at 8 o'clock, and then I'm usually done with my research and heading into the station at 3:30, right at the height of traffic. And one day it just got to the point that I thought, I've got to change something in this life. If you ever had vertigo, I mean, when this is where the world starts spinning all of a sudden with no advance warning, you literally can't stand up. And you figure it's your body telling you maybe it's time to slow down a little bit. So that's where we're at. But having said that, I hope to continue doing some things with the station. And I love the weather. My passion for the weather has always been there. My parents could never figure out what they had done wrong to get somebody so interested in the weather.
This started at what age?
I can't give you an age. I just know it's always been there. I used to have paper routes as a kid, and I'd go through the instrument catalogs, weather instrument catalogs, and dream about. I even wanted to put a bedroom radar set in, and I wrote the Bendix Corporation. Now, this is as a teenager who's earning $3 a week with a paper route. So that's how, you talk about being naive. I tell young people who've come through our office, I said, be too dumb to know you're not supposed to be able to do what you want to do and go for it, and try, and you never know what may come of the whole thing. But my gosh, it's led to a heck of a career.
Now, you as a kid,
yeah,
you were doing what I was doing. I was being a pretend radio
sure,
DJ.
Sure.
And you were doing actual weather forecasts with whatever materials that you could find, and wound up on WKKD.
That's right.
In Aurora, one of the two radio stations in Aurora.
In Aurora, yeah.
And I worked at the other one.
WMRO.
Not at the same time, but I came later on.
Yeah.
But it's so funny that our paths kind of almost crossed out there. But you were doing weather forecasts as a teenager, right, on the radio.
Well, let me tell you how that came into being. I was born in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I don't remember it. Only lived there 2 years. My folks are natives of Western Pennsylvania. And then my dad was a mechanical engineer by trade. He sold large and industrial valves to power plants and to water treatment facilities. And he was transferred from Pittsburgh out to New York City and did the commute into New York for 13 years. And so I grew up in those years in New Jersey. And as a young kid interested in the weather, you didn't have internet access in those days. So the only source of real-time weather information you had were newspaper weather maps. And then there was a publication that came out of Washington, D.C. from the superintendent of documents. They called it the Daily Weather Map. It was a beautiful thing. They had a surface weather map, upper air charts in it, the plots of the rain and temperature and so forth that had occurred around the country. When I lived in New Jersey, I could get that the next day. It was mailed from Washington, and you got it in the mail the next day. When we moved out here, my dad was transferred out to Aurora with Henry Pratt Company, where that terrible shooting was a couple years ago.
Right.
And this was quite a transition. I realized I was more a Midwesterner than I was an Easterner. The whole lifestyle here was so different and so much more attractive to me. But I found that weather map publication I got arrived 4 days late.
Mm.
So I thought, well, what am I going to do about this? And I sat down and wrote what I'm told was an 8-page letter to WKKD claiming, you know, having the audacity to suggest I do a better weather forecast for them in Aurora than they were getting from Chicago, 40 miles away. And, you know, I think I wasn't very sure myself. So I look back at that and I think the audacity of this kid to, you know, even presuppose, make that proposition to a radio station. But the goal was to get some weather maps. Yeah. So the program director, a fellow by the name of Rusty Tim, and I drove into Woodlawn Avenue, the University of Chicago campus, which is where the then Weather Bureau, hadn't been renamed the National Weather Service at that point, did the forecast for Indiana, Illinois, and Wisconsin. All came out of that office, and then there was a public service office downtown here in the federal building. So we went in and we sat down with a fellow by the name of Joe Folks, who is the meteorologist in charge of the Chicago forecast office, and I said, is there any chance of getting some weather maps? And he said, well, he thought about it for a second, and he said, if you pre-address and stamp envelopes for us, and if the radio station will pay for the reproduction of the weather maps that they were plotting in office, they had an aviation desk, a public desk, so they would plot weather maps in the office down there and reproduce them on a Bruning architect diagram machine and provide copies to each of these desks. And then they would run an extra copy off and put it in the envelope and send it out to me. And that's how I got my weather maps. And, you know, years later, when we were doing the Chicago Tribune weather page, we brought four 40-year veterans of the Weather Service, one of whom was Paul Daly, who was head of the office here in Chicago for a long time. But some of these guys remembered packing up these maps, and they told me there were only two sets of maps sent out of the Chicago office every day. One went to Argonne National Laboratory, and the other one went to Tom Skilling. And they said, everybody in the office said, who's this Tom Skilling that we're sending these maps to? Well, it was a 14-year-old kid. But, you know, it's one of the many examples of the way the National Weather Service has fostered the career of young people who are interested in the weather.
And yeah, that's the early beginnings of Tom Skilling. More of our visit that we had with Tom in studio prior to his retirement from last February. Our favorite interview for 2024, our number one interview for 2024, continues after a news update. It is 11:37, and this is Dean Richards, Sunday morning on WGN. 10 days till Christmas, hard to believe. We're digging up some of our favorite interviews and things that we've done during the past year. Our number one A-list interview for the year was an in-studio visit that we had from the great Tom Skilling as he was retiring as chief meteorologist from WGN-TV. Over this past weekend, Tom was honored with an honorary doctorate from Northern Illinois University for being a passionate broadcaster, an educator, a trailblazer, an advocate for climate awareness. Back in February when he came in studio and spent some time with us, we talked about his career and honored him with messages from other people who loved him.
What will we do without you, Tom Skilling? Your joyful, brilliant, delightful self, bringing us the weather daily. Ah, you will be so missed, but I know all good things ahead for your kind soul. Happy retirement, my friend.
That is the great Bonnie Hunt wishing you all of the best.
What
as well.
You know, Dean, I had a chance to have dinner with Bonnie. Boy, she's a sweetheart.
She is.
You know, she's out in L.A., and I guess the Cubs fans get together for dinner out there.
Right.
So,
well, she gets back here fairly often as well. You know, she was here. Her mom passed away a couple of years ago now. But she was here taking care of her mom nonstop.
I hadn't realized her mom had passed away. Yeah. I remember we talked about that. Yeah.
Yeah, her family is in the like northwest side, Park Ridge area. So she's in town all the time. I got together with her. I was in L.A. a couple of weeks ago, and we had dinner.
That's so nice.
We just had a lovely time. But she sends her love to you. And
how nice.
Was nice enough to record a little something for you as well.
Don't you find that when you meet people like that, you think they're, you know, they're famous and they won't know who you are and maybe they're unapproachable. Nothing could be further from the truth. I'm sure find that all the time.
Well, I am unapproachable.
So. Well, you know, the truth can be told now. That anything but that.
Anyone who's run into me at the grocery store on Saturday morning knows
you are. Such
it ain't
a
pretty.
Delight.
Let's just say that.
No, I'll tell you something. Yeah, you know, Dean, you work so hard, and you're such a pleasure and so approachable. I hope people realize that's not true.
I want to. I want to talk about what a day in the life of Tom Skilling has been like.
Tom Skilling joins WGN, becomes a member of the News 9 team. And Tom, I hope you're as happy about it as we are.
Jack, it's indeed a pleasure to work with such a group of professionals here at WGN and in one of the most exciting weather markets probably in the whole United States. We've had our share of unusual weather, not only here.
Listen to you, the young boy. Coming to WGN, that was your very first time on WGN, 1978.
Do you know, Dean, how that happened? I had been working in Milwaukee, and I got a call from Jack Jacobson, who was the operations director at WGN. And he said, our general manager has a place in Lake Geneva, and he's watched you on Milwaukee television, and we wondered if you'd come down and do a couple of weekend weather shows, and there might be a job at it at the end of the road for you if this works out. And if not, you can say, well, I did a couple of shows in the Chicago market.
Yeah.
And, you know, I didn't think I was ready. I thought, boy, I'm pretty young. And I called my friend John Coleman, and I said, you know, John, I've just had an offer from WGN, but I don't think I'm going to do it. Because I don't think I'm ready. And he said, do it. He said, they've been looking for a year, and you're the first one I hear who they've offered a chance to do it, work at WGN. So I came down here. I was terrified. I did two weekend weather shows, and Jack Jacobson got on the line Monday and said, how'd you like to come to work for us?
Wow.
And that was how the job came into being. So it's quite interesting.
I was thinking about how your job predicting the weather has changed in these 45 years. I remember
stunning.
When I first started seeing you running down the halls with reams and reams of paper. Maps, and you and your staff manually putting things together.
Oh, yeah.
And what it's like now, how it's changed.
Oh, revolution. I tell the young people who come through our office that the last 50 years have seen a greater advancement in the science of meteorology than probably in all the time back to Aristotle, 340 BC, who wrote the first treatise on meteorology that started the whole science. It was called Meteorologica. And all that time, you know, from Aristotle up to about a half century ago, I mean, the progress was interesting. But think what's happened since then. Last Doppler radar, satellite. I went to school at the University of Wisconsin, which is the birthplace of satellite meteorology, and we sat in classrooms and for the first time watched landfalling hurricanes and thunderstorm complexes develop in real time. We had never seen that before. And all I could think was, wow, if you could bring this to television, this would be something.
Yeah.
But you realize with the advent of the satellite, we were able to look down on the 70% of the planet that's ocean and therefore poorly observed. And they came up with techniques up at the university there for identifying the moisture through the atmosphere. And also we could feed that into computer models that then run physics equations and look at the evolution of the atmosphere and tell us how the weather is going to unfold. So it's been an amazing time. Yeah, do you know, they used to think that the weather office of the future would be a football stadium filled with a bunch of accountants and mathematicians with slide rules, and that they'd all work in teams on equations. And at the end of the process, there'd be a numerical weather weather forecast, and they figured there'd be about 40,000 mathematicians. They couldn't have imagined the kind of computing power that we have now. You know, we run our computer models on machines that do quadrillion operations per second.
Wow, that's amazing.
And next year, they're going to put online at Argonne a computer that will do 2 billion operations per second.
Wow.
And among the things they'll be able to do is they'll be able to map the human circulatory system, how our brain works. We'll run climate models with a resolution that one could only dream about. And this will help in figuring out how cancer spreads.
Amazing.
Yeah. And these machines are just stunning.
It's amazing when we're having storm systems, possible blizzard-like conditions, tornadoes, when you guys and gals in the weather department take over the airwaves and we're able to see everything that's going on thanks to the technology and all of your knowledge of explaining it all to us, that we can see it on our phones, that we were able to see much of this.
Stunning.
That you have in your weather office now on our phone is quite amazing.
It really is.
What is a typical day like for you? I know you said you wake up at 8 o'clock and you start looking at maps and things at home, right?
Yeah, I sit in my bathrobe in my home weather office there, and I have 4 databases. I pull down 40 different model forecasts and record the temperatures that are being predicted and all the rest, and then you average across them. We call that ensembling. And then you look at how that collection of models has fared recently, what the accuracy has been, what the error rate has been, and you do a bias correction. It used to be just 4 decades ago, you had one medium range model that went out maybe 5 to 10 days, and you had another one that was a short range model. Today, what they do is they run not one version of a model, but they take the whole set of observations from airplanes and buoys and satellites and in-flight aircraft, and they reinterpret the initial data and feed that into the computer to describe the initial state of the atmosphere, and then the machines go to work with fluid dynamics equations and physics equations and advance the atmosphere in tiny time steps into the future. Some models do it 75 seconds at a time, so they'll calculate the weather for the whole region 75 seconds ahead, and then 75 seconds more, and 75 seconds beyond that. And what emerges is a multi-day forecast, which is pretty amazing. Do you know what's interesting? The movie Oppenheimer recently was quite interesting. The whole notion, a fellow by the name of Alan Turing, brilliant UK mathematician, was the one who wrote a paper in the mid-30s and said, you know, we could create machines given the proper instructions, these machines probably could solve any equation in the world. Turing was the one with a group that broke the German Enigma code in World War II. And that probably ended the war 2 years early and saved millions of lives, the ability to read what the Germans were sending out to their U-boats and all. But it was based on his work that a guy by the name of John von Neumann, a Hungarian-American mathematician, worked at Princeton University to build this country's first mainframe computer. And Oppenheimer got wind of that, and he wanted to do calculations perfecting the atomic bomb. But von Neumann had escaped both the Nazis and the Russians, the Soviets, and he felt, I think, that weather control was the ultimate weapon. So while Oppenheimer grabbed this computer and did the calculations by day, von Neumann thought, boy, it's going to sit there dormant at night, so I'm going to put together a numerical modeling team to forecast the weather. And so that's when numerical modeling left the abstract and theoretical realm and started being done in practice. The early models were terrible, but from them has emerged this whole set of models that has perfected hurricane forecasting, flood forecasting. Heaven only knows how many lives have been saved by timely weather forecasts, and they only continue to get better.
The best of 2024, our in-studio visit with Tom Skilling last February. We'll have more coming up in just a moment. Yeah, Debbie is on the phone line with Tom Skilling. You're on WGN. Hello.
Hello. How are you?
Hi, Debbie.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to wish you a happy birthday. Oh. We share the same birthday.
Are you kidding? February 20th, huh?
February 20th.
So you're another Pisces person here.
Yeah, we're cuspal.
Do you find, Debbie, that what they say about Pisces, the traits they attribute to us, are accurate? I find them to be pretty accurate.
Yes, I do as well.
Well, happy birthday to you, and how nice to talk to you.
Happy birthday to you.
Thank you.
You're my favorite celebrity that I share my birthday with.
How nice. I'll tell you. Well, thank you. It's always great to talk to another February 20th person.
Debbie, thank you for the call. James, you're on WGN with Tom Skilling. Hi.
Hey, Tom. Boy, yeah. I've been following your career. First off, congratulations and happy birthday.
Thank you. How nice. And thank you for your loyal viewership and following what I do. Thank you.
You play a big part in a lot of people's lives here in the Chicago area.
Huh.
And that, like I said, I followed your career, and because of you, you taught me about weather. I lost my fear of storms, and that got me into doing. I actually had I'm a trained storm spotter. Jim Alsop is the one that trained me way back.
Wow!
Yeah, he had the classes down there in Aurora. He had it.
Yes,
I did that too.
Jim Alsop was National Weather Service meteorologist who did the storm training. Well, are you a spotter now, a storm spotter?
Not necessarily. I have spot here and there. It just depends. In the Chicago area, it's kind of tough to go storm chasing because there's too many houses and things like that. But
yes.
I did. I was vacationing. And my daughter lives in Quincy, Illinois. There's a lot of open land out there. So not chasing, but spotting and that, because you got wide open and. So I do that, and I did call them one time. I was vacationing. It was in North Carolina, and there was a water spout, but I called it in, and it ended up going on the land. So it ended up being low and EF0.
How cool.
It was really, really, really small. But, yeah, but I went to many of your storm seminars. That was disappointing when, after 38 years, you stopped doing them. Those were wonderful. My daughter got to meet you. We went down the at the intermission there, and she got to go down there and meet you, too. So I did get to meet you once.
Thank you for coming.
I just wanted to tell you, thank you for everything, Tom. And I just, you're going to be missed. And one last thing is a great choice on Demetrius. Your whole weather staff, any of them could have taken your, well, actually, no one's ever going to take your place. But the first time I saw Demetrius on the new news, my jaw dropped. The way he did the weather, I said, that's the next Tom.
I know.
Because he does weather a lot like you do. So a great choice on someone that's going to follow your footsteps.
Well, I think so, too. You know, they they brought a couple of people in, and I thought, gosh, I hope they're not thinking of somebody else. And the boss called me and said, we're announcing that Demetrius is our choice. And I said, oh, thank heavens. I said, I was afraid you were going to go with somebody else. I said, you made the right decision. Yes. He is one of the nicest people and an incredible meteorologist. But, well, thank you. I'll pass that on to Demetrius, too. I'm thrilled for Demetrius.
Okay.
This is a, you know, John Coleman used to say this is Broadway for weathermen here, and it really is. This city, I mean, our weather is fascinating around here. So anybody who has the privilege of being able to communicate that really has quite an interesting profession.
Yeah,
I'll tell
quite
you
that. Quite a platform.
Yeah.
Thank you for the call, James. We appreciate that.
Thanks,
Demetrius
James.
Ivory, your last day on the air will be February 28th.
Yes.
And then Demetrius Ivory takes over as chief meteorologist.
Yes, indeed.
On the leap year day on February 29th. So we'll look forward to that.
Yeah.
847 area code texts in. Tom, I've read that Illinois has more tornadoes than any other state. Is that true?
It was this past year. We led the pack. That hasn't always been the case, but we are an active tornado state. There are no two ways about it. And, you know, we used to think we assigned the Tornado Alley moniker to the Plain States and the far western Midwest. Turns out the area that's most active are the Gulf Coast states, the Gulf states and the southern states. But we in Illinois are no shrinking violets. And in the last year, I think the last count was we had 128, and I think the next closest state was Nebraska, and close behind it was Texas. And Texas is a much larger state. So it varies from year to year, but no question. What we've been finding as our climate continues changing is that these storms are occurring earlier and they're occurring later. Examples of that are, gosh, we had a tornado out in the western suburbs a couple of years ago, an F3, F4 that hit in Fairdale early in the season. And then we had the Washington-Illinois tornado, that terrible storm near Peoria that destroyed half of the community. And that occurred in November. It was one of the latest EF4 storms, intensity tornadoes. That's a top-tier intensity ever to occur in Illinois. This is an active state for severe weather, no question.
616 area code. Tom, congratulations on your well-deserved retirement. From a fan in Michigan, you are the Mr. Rogers of meteorology.
Well, how nice.
I could just see you walking into the weather center, yeah. And you put your tennis shoes on, yeah. You put your sweater on. It's a beautiful, if it's nice weather,
yeah.
It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood.
Yeah. I always remember Eddie Murphy's takeoff on that, too.
Mr. Robinson's neighborhood. It is a very special morning around here today. Tom Skilling in studio with us. 312-981-7200 is our phone number for texting questions and comments, and also your phone calls, like this one from Paul. You're on WGN with Tom Skilling.
Oh, thank you so much. It's great to talk to my two favorite hair-challenged broadcasters.
Yeah. You know, I keep telling Dean, it's all the brain activity. Burned the follicles out. That's our story.
Oh,
are you follically challenged as well?
Getting there, but I still have some red hair.
That's good.
Enjoy it.
Still doing okay.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
It's liberating. Once you get to our point, it's liberating.
I'm out in Woodstock. Just wanted to thank you so much for coming out for Groundhog Day.
That was wonderful. What a beautiful community. It was such fun. You know, for years I've kind of kidded about the groundhog and the whole Groundhog Day phenomenon. But I'll tell you, to be there with Woodstock Willie and the marvelous folks of Woodstock, I stayed in the inn there where the movie was shot.
Yep.
It's awesome. I told them I was going to take the mattress in the bed with me because it was so comfortable. was marvelous.
You ran into somebody else. I don't think it was in Woodstock, but later that day,
yeah.
You ran into the star of the movie, Groundhog Day, Bill Murray.
It was a great movie. I tell you, how nice. Congratulations to
Steve
all of
Kahn
you.
Got some terrible weather.
I know.
It was the worst winter ever.
I know. You
By
were
far,
talking
it wasn't
about
even close.
Oh, yeah. And McHenry County can have some real doozies up there, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
I'll tell you. Well, is it nice to meet you, Bill? I'll tell you. Good to see you. And congratulations
on all the good work.
An amazing career. Thank
What's the
you,
forecast
sir.
For the evening? What are we going to see?
Well, you know, we're all right. You know, the groundhog did not see a shadow up in Woodstock this morning, so it's nice to have him. Seen it right here.
Here you go, February of this year. Tom Skilling encountering Bill Murray up in Woodstock. Our favorite interview that we did of all the A-listers that we talked to this year, Tom Skilling rose to the top, his in-studio visit with us prior to his retirement. I had mentioned he's going to be doing some occasional projects on WGN-TV. Not regular weather forecasting like he had done for 45 years, but you will see him again on WGN-TV. And again, congratulations to Tom on your honorary doctorate from Northern Illinois University yesterday. Some people enjoying the show today on our text line.
Well, that's nice to know. And I'll tell you, Tom Skilling should be a feature here once or twice a year. I just loved listening to that.
I could play that interview every week.
Yeah, I know. And that was just part of it. We had him on for 2 hours.
We had him on for 2 hours. That was the only part. So maybe we will revisit that again at some point. We'll probably have him on live when he starts doing his special reports.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure we can get him to come by and visit with us.
Mm-hmm. I would love to have him back.
But back to us.
Okay. We getting yelled at here?
No.
Okay.
630 area code. You guys are cracking me up today.
Well, thank you very much.
815 area code. You guys are on fire today.
Nice.
708 area code. This is my favorite time of the week, Sunday morning on WGN.
Wow. Wow.
Isn't that nice?
That's amazing.
I texted that one in.
But. You did. Okay. Wait till they hear us play the banjo. The real banjo.
When we learn how to play the banjo.
When we learn how to play the banjo.
That's going to be spectacular. Andy, I have something special for you that was sent in. A holiday parody song about Chicago sports.
Oh.
I'm going to play that coming up next. Our silly little Sunday show. Have a few laughs. Swanee delivering all the news that we need. Andy on sports. Really, it's everything you could possibly want in a radio show. In life, really. Don't you think?
Agreed.
So, yes, this is why this is a Nobel Prize winning show, a Peabody Award winning show.
Yep.
Absolutely. Recreating Andy Griffith episodes.
I love that I have people actually believing that now. I've had people come up to me and go, when did you guys win the
when did you win the Peabody Award?
Yeah, when did you guys win the Peabody Award? I made that up. That's just a joke. I didn't think anyone would believe me, but we've lied about it so many times. People now believe it. It's true that if you just keep lying over and over and
sooner
over
again, or later,
eventually,
sooner or later,
people begin to believe what's what.
So you have a song for Andy.
I'm going to get to that in a second. I just wanted to get the box office numbers out of the way for the weekend. Moana 2 is the big winner again. It is followed by Wicked. By the way, starting on Christmas Day, they're going to be doing special showings of sing-along Wicked. It's been a problem in some theaters where people are singing along with the songs, disturbing other people, you know, when they go to see Wicked. But they're going to have specific performances starting on Christmas Day at select theaters where they're actually going to put the words up on the screen so everybody can sing along with Wicked. So keep an eye out for that if you're a fan. Anyway, that was the number two movie of the weekend. This Kraven the Hunter, not especially a good Marvel movie, only could debut in the number three spot. Gladiator 2 after that, and then this animated Lord of the Rings, The War of the Rohirrim, is the top five movie of the weekend. So there you go. I got to get my my movie stuff in.
But Wicked was terrific.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, you saw it.
Saw it when I was with Gilda in Virginia for Thanksgiving. Yeah.
Look at you.
It was great. Saw it in 3D, too.
And now that you mentioned that, you did tell me that.
Mm-hmm.
You snuck into the theater, if I remember correctly.
No.
Via the unlocked open door on the right side of the theater.
No, are you suggesting once again that I was trying to get away with getting free stuff?
Yes. As long as you ask.
We paid the admission. We paid full price.
Yes, as long as you ask.
Well worth it, too.
Yes. Did you sneak in your own snacks?
No. I was hungry. We ended up getting a giant thing of popcorn and some hot dogs.
Oh.
So, but no, we did not sneak in our own stuff.
It's the second time that hot dogs have come up with you.
I know.
Today. I didn't realize that.
I'm a big hot dog fan.
It's a big part of your staple of nutrition.
Okay. Had them for dinner Monday night, too.
Attaboy. You know what I haven't had in a long time that I'd like to have? Beans and hot dogs. Pork and beans.
Pork and beans, yeah. Sure.
Chopped up hot dogs.
Yeah.
And that would, we used to have that all the time as kids.
We did, too. The Campbell's beans.
Yeah.
Just open them up, heat them up,
put them in
slice up a hot dog.
Put them in a little pat, put a little hot dog in there.
A quick and easy meal. So we got off on this now. You have a song for Andy here.
All right. Let's settle down. What do you
come
got?
On.
Got a hot date coming up here?
Got a bus to
no, let's go.
Relax.
Will you?
Show's on.
I've only got 14 minutes until my next newscast.
Simmer.
You've been repeating all the newscasts anyway. It doesn't make any difference. All right, so I got this email. Dean, longtime WGN viewer, listener, I enjoy your TV segments and your Sunday morning radio show. I'm sending along this little holiday parody song called I'm Dreaming of a Winning Sports Team.
Keep dreaming.
Set to White Christmas.
May your days be merry and bright.
It was therapeutic to create the song, and I thought it might help Chicago, since it helped me during this horrendous sports year in our city. I hope you enjoy it. And this comes to us from a gentleman by the name of Jade Mays.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, Jade Mays, I'm dreaming of a winning sports team.
Remember way back when we used to win? Those were the days. I'm dreaming of winning sports teams, just like the ones we used to know. Victory. Anybody? Please. We sure could use some victories.
Ooh. I love that.
Not bad at all.
I love that.
Very good.
Love those high notes.
That's very well done. That is clever.
Right?
Yeah.
What have we done that productive?
Not sure.
That was nice.
Well, we're going to wait until we do the show at the bowling alley. Then we'll see.
How do you think Hampton OB would? They'd probably like the song, right?
Yeah. I think they'd get a kick out of it. Yeah.
You're on tomorrow night with them?
Yeah, we start at 6 tomorrow night. We'll go to 6 till 7 for the pregame. And then we'll come on after the Monday night game is over, around 10:30 till midnight.
That's late.
Full day, yeah. But, this is going to be one of those where you, I think most fans are probably just praying for a good game. Not to get embarrassed on national television like they've done before.
Yeah. What's your prediction?
They're going to get destroyed.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. Minnesota's playing for something. They're at home. They're debuting brand new jerseys, too. The Vikings, for the first time in their franchise history, are going to wear white helmets.
Really?
With white jersey tops and white pants. They're calling it their Winter Warrior look.
I guess I can see that, but...
Yeah. Well, I guess it's like snow or ice or something like that for what they're going through in Minneapolis. snow.
They are going through some fierce weather right now in Minneapolis.
So it'll be a new look, you know, probably same result, but new look. The sooner this bear season is over, the better everybody's going to be. I don't want it to go over that quickly because I like being around here and being around the guys.
Right.
But at the same time, I feel for everybody who has to.
It's been rough.
Watch this. Yeah, it's been rough. Going back to 2 or 3 years, and you can probably even go back longer than that.
But remember, at the beginning of the season, when everybody thought that Caleb Williams was our savior.
Yeah.
And that everything was going to change because of that.
But what did I tell? What did I tell you?
I feel bad for him too.
But what did I tell you before the season started? When everybody was saying, I said, "Look, he's still a rookie, and it's not something that a quarterback can do all on his own. He's going to need people to block for him. He's going to need someone to call actual offensive plays that are running in the NFL, not in Pee Wee football. He's been sacked the most times of anybody in the league. He's been running for his life quite a bit. But I think, and this is kind of a weird thing to say, but from all of this, I think he's going to learn that this is not how you want to do things. And he's going to learn a lot from this experience. And hopefully when they get some competent people up in the front office there to figure out how to build this franchise the right way, he'll be a part of it.
Yeah. Are we going to need a new head coach? Or is the guy that's in there now, is he going to – it's possible that he may stay there.
It's hard to say right now. I mean – and it's hard to judge Thomas Brown on one game. I mean, they had 1 week or so to prepare for a tough game and on the road. Another tough game on the road coming up here. But hopefully his messaging is starting to sink in a little bit. He's got 4 more weeks to audition for this. I have a sneaking suspicion that they're going to go outside the organization at the end of the day. So it'd be nice for him to be able to audition for other teams too. So
yeah.
But it's been an ugly year.
Yeah, it's been.
Jade Song is right on because it's been an ugly year from pretty much January to December.
Every team.
Yeah, the Cubs are the only team that had a winning record, but it was completely disappointing because of where they were supposed to be, and they were supposed to compete, and they didn't again. But they did win 83 games, so they ended up with a winning record. They may be the only team with the. Except the Bulls and the Blackhawks are still playing right now, so we can't really say for sure, but it's looking like the Cubs are going to be the only team with a winning record.
By the way, Jade sent me an email. I thought it was a guy that just was, you know, hitting the high notes, like we've heard. Jade is a woman.
Hmm.
Jade said, by the way, I'm a girl. So
she did a nice job.
Yeah.
I thought that was very, very
still
clever.
Still very beautiful and very clever. Thank you, Jade.
Very timely, too.
For that. Schwani, what's your analysis of tomorrow night's game?
Well, I have a question, though, I may ask.
All right, go ahead.
Look at you.
I have a question for you, Andy.
Okay. Look at you, Helen Thomas.
Okay. What are the challenges that the Bears face tomorrow?
The coin toss, because that's the beginning of the game. That's their biggest challenge.
Is this the equivalent of your, can you give me 5 things I should look for in the game?
There
tomorrow?
You go, yeah.
Is that, you've found a new way of rephrasing that question?
The Bears face several challenges. They face a blitzing Vikings defense. They face a very rejuvenated Vikings offense, which includes Jordan Addison and also Justin Jefferson, two wide receivers that when they were playing here in Chicago, a couple of weeks ago, they both went for over 100 yards and both scored 2 touchdowns. So it's there's a lot to fear in this game if you're a Bears fan. And with that said, the Bears will probably win like 42-7.
Well, that's a very thorough answer to a very profound question.
Well, the question was so-so. The answer I thought was a lot better.
You are both very profound in my opinion. highlight tomorrow night is I think I'm going to make a big old pot of chili during the game.
Good night for it, too.
Be a great night for it. Man, we should have some here.
I have been craving a nice homemade chili, and I think tomorrow night's my night for this.
Melina makes an awesome turkey chili verde.
Oh, that would be really good.
I could probably eat 352 days out of the 365 days of the year.
Look at you. Yeah. That's good eating.
Oh, it's really good eating.
We're going to kick off the old food show here in just a minute. So let's get a few chili recipes out there that are surefire hits on your table. Plus, I'm going to tell you what I'm going to be cooking this coming Wednesday on my TV cooking segment. Do you like baked ham? I'm mostly asking Andy because Andy pretty much doesn't like anything.
I'm not a big ham eater, no.
Not a ham eater.
No.
Chwana, you like a nice baked
ham? Oh, yeah, sure do. Probably have it for Christmas.
Well, that's why I want to do this recipe. Baked ham's pretty easy to make. Basically, you're just warming it up, really. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to hollow out the turkey. I'm going to hollow out the turkey and fill it with stuffing.
Wait a minute. You just said ham.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm going to fill it with stuffing. Then I'm going to bake it, glaze it and bake it, and then cut it into slices. So when you get a slice of turkey, it's going to have a big thing of stuffing in the middle of it.
Oh, cool.
I don't think Schwani's buying this.
No, I am buying it. I'm just trying to... I thought we were talking about ham, and then you switched to turkey, so...
No, it's okay. It's ham. Did I say turkey?
You said turkey.
No, it's ham.
Okay.
It's a baked ham.
Hollowed out the ham.
It's a baked...
Put the stuffing in it. Oh, yeah. That would be really good. Yeah.
Sweetness of the... Saltiness of the ham, the sweetness of the glaze, the savoriness of the stuffing, all cooked together in one... mess.
And to go along with it, a sweet potato or a candied yam, as they call them.
Yeah. Maybe some nice cranberry, homemade cranberry sauce.
I made homemade cranberry sauce for Thanksgiving.
Oh, good.
And it was a success.
What'd you put in it?
Cranberry sugar and boiling water.
Wow.
It's like I said.
It's complex.
But it worked. Nice.
All right, we're going to get to all that and much more. Chili, though. How about a nice bowl of chili?
Ready to go right now.
Let's get some recipes up next here.
With the kids jingle-belling and everyone telling you be of good cheer, it's the most wonderful time of the year.
It's the yes, indeed, it is the most wonderful time of the year.
With those holiday greetings and gay happy meetings when friends...
Half the reason is all the good food we get to eat this time of year. A lot of people are doing baking right now. Made some fantastic rum balls on TV this past Wednesday. If you want to check out the recipe, check out the video. Super easy to make and super delicious, I might add. And super boozy, I might add, as well. But the recipes, all the recipes that we make on TV, all the videos are all at WGNTV.com/DeanCooks. This coming Wednesday, we're going to be doing something that you may want to try for your Christmas entree, and that is a nice baked ham. Certainly easy enough if you just want to do, you know, regular smoked ham. Heat it up, glaze it, cut it up or get a spiral ham. Those are nice and easy as well. But I saw a recipe for a pork roast in which you butterfly the pork roast, lay it out flat, and then put stuffing in it, like, you know, savory stuffing in the middle of it, and then roll up the pork roast again, tie it, and cook it. And I thought, well, that's an interesting idea for, an entree. But ham is, always a favorite for a Thanksgiving table or a buffet. I wonder if that would work for ham. And I think it will. I'm going to give it a try this coming Wednesday on my TV cooking segment. And I'm going to take a boneless ham. I think it's about 8 pounds, something like that. I already bought the ham. And I don't think I'm going to butterfly it. Maybe I will. But what I would like to try to do is sort of core the ham. Just cut a big hole in the middle of it. Not completely hollow it out, but maybe, 2-3-inch hole down the middle of the ham. And prepare some stuffing, not overly savory. I think the stuffing ought to be a little bit on the sweet side, so it complements well with the ham, with you know, with nuts and herbs, and I think I'm going to put some pomegranate seeds in it. You know, cook up the stuffing separately, and then once I do my excavation into this ham, I'm going to stuff the ham and glaze it, put it in the oven, probably 350 for, I don't know, 30 minutes, 35 minutes, something like that, till the whole thing warms up. The ham's already cooked, so really it's just a matter of warming it up. The stuffing is already cooked. It's just a matter really of warming everything up. I'm going to put, I like cloves on my baked ham, so I'll put cloves throughout. I like pineapple slices on my baked ham, so I'm going to put some pineapple slices on there as well. And then once it's cooked, and you know, when you slice it, I think that's going to be the visual payoff. When you slice it, you're going to get a slice of ham with, you know, this little round of stuffing in the middle of it. So I think that that's going to be the thing which is a little bit different. So we're going to give it a try on Wednesday and see how that works. So if anybody has any ideas about that, you know, let me know. This will be the first time. This is going to be a total experiment. We'll see how it works on TV. But I also mentioned we were talking about a nice bowl of chili. I wanted to share the recipe that I've done homemade chili a couple of times on TV already, and I've got recipes that are posted already, WGNTV.com/DeanCooks. So you can go take a look at that. You can take a look at the videos as well, the segments where I actually made chili. But I know a lot of you also are chili makers, you know, maybe you've got a special chili recipe. The last one that I did on TV, I did in a slow cooker. Obviously, you can do it in a Dutch oven, but I think a slow cooker is really the way to go for something like this, where, like, you know, right now, for example, you put the ingredients in and, you know, put it on a slow cook. By dinner time, it's all done. You don't have to do anything. And the house smells great, and you've got this fantastic chili when it's all done, you know, 4 or 5 hours later. So I don't want to go through all the ingredients because it sounds more meticulous than it really is. But it's just, you know, it's taking some I like to put green pepper in mine. So I take a whole green pepper and I seed it, of course, and chop it up, kind of diced, I guess. I leave the pieces a little bit big because I want to see them and taste them when I'm eating it. I put some garlic in, of course. I put in, what else do I put in? I put black beans in. I put diced tomatoes, canned diced tomatoes in it. I put a little bit of unsweetened cocoa powder, just a tiny bit, and some cinnamon and some cumin and some chili powder in it. It's a great explosion of flavors. But I also put some beef stew meat. I like chunks of beef. Ground beef is also great. It's really good. But I happen to like the beef stew meat in my chili. That's how I did mine. I put all of that. If you go online, you'll see the exact proportions and what goes in when. But I put all of that into the slow cooker and just let it go for 4 or 5 hours. Meanwhile, on the side, I've taken some cooked elbow macaroni and cooked that per package directions. And so I'll have that ready when the chili is ready. So you can serve it with, you know, you put a little macaroni in the bowl and then some chili on top of that. You can't go wrong. So that's my slow cooker chili recipe. Again, it's posted up WGNTV.com/DeanCooks. You know, on a day like this, you can always, whip something up for a nice chilly day. Here is the 773 area code that says, I always use whole dry chilies and rehydrate them and then whirl them up in the food processor and use that as a base. It's so much better than store-bought chili powder. I'll bet it is. You know, I've never actually done that where I've taken the whole dry chilies and rehydrated them. I've never actually done that in any of my recipes. I always just go to the spice bottles. But I'll bet that's 100% correct. That's really tasty. So thank you. That's a great suggestion. I love that. Here is the 312 area code that says, Dean, there's a restaurant in Pilsen called Honky Tonk Barbecue that makes chili with hunks of brisket. That sounds good. That sounds really good. There is a restaurant that I've known for years out in Algonquin called Texan Barbecue, and they make Texas-style chili with chunks of beef. It's not brisket, but they do theirs with beef as well. And I don't know. It just seems like so much more substantial when you're making some chili and as opposed to the ground beef, which I grew up with. My mom used to make the chili with the ground beef, and it was perfectly fine. It's perfectly delicious. But these chunks of beef, you can't be beat. And I love this brisket idea as well. Thank you for sending that in to us. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Love to get some chili recipes for you. Any ideas on my stuffed ham recipe at all? Anybody suggestions? Warnings? 312-981-7200. 1251, Dean Richards, Sunday morning, WGN. Some really good suggestions coming in on our text line. 331 area code. Dean, I caramelize apple and bacon and butter to stuff with the pork or ham. Raisins would be nice too. Excellent ideas. I love those. I'm definitely going to do that. Here's one that says, Dean, I make my chili with venison, both ground, that's 80-20 mix, and chunks of venison chopped up in cubes. Otherwise, it's the same basic chili recipe. I'll bet that adds a nice layer of flavor. Here's another that says, Dean, add ground Italian sausage to your chili. You won't know it's there, but it adds an extra layer of flavor. I love that. 708 area code. Maybe put some chopped pineapple into your stuffing for the ham. It'll add a little sweetness in there. Well, I was going to put some pineapple on top of the ham, but that's a good idea to put it inside the stuffing as well. 312-981-7200. Pete, how about you? You have a chili recipe? Are you there, Pete?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yes, sir.
This is an interesting one. I have a friend who's done tailgates at Notre Dame for 50 years. And every year at the last game of the season, everybody brings a chili, and he dumps it all in the same pot.
Ooh.
So we have a different chili every year. And at the end of the day, he takes a cup, freezes it until the next year, and then you might have a 50-year-old bean in there. Who knows?
So that's the starter.
I let you know that's interesting.
Yeah, you freeze it, and then that's the starter for next year's chili.
Right. Right, exactly.
That's a clever idea. And who wouldn't wouldn't want to eat a 50-year-old bean on, after all? Thank you for the call. Eddie, you're on WGN. Hello.
Greetings. Grand Junction, Michigan, across the pond there.
Welcome.
Thank you. I stumbled upon a local beefalo farm. Their website is superbeefalofarm.com.
Okay.
I purchased their ground beefalo to make my chili. It turns out really nice.
So what is that, ground beef and what's the other, is it buffalo?
The animal is actually a recognized hybrid of standard beef cattle with a buffalo.
Oh. I didn't know that there was such a thing. So does this come as like a ground meat then?
Yeah, when they, you know, they prepare the whole animal, so you can get steaks and ribs, and I just buy the ground stuff because I love chili.
Yeah, get whatever you want. And I'll bet that adds an interesting flavor to it. I've never cooked with beefalo.
And it's they're very low range grass fed. They feed them beer, wort, the mash, and then in the fall they get the apple pressings left over from the cider mills.
Huh.
So these are some very well fed critters.
Interesting, very very interesting. Eddie, I appreciate your call. I'm going to let you go here because we have like a underwater connection or something going on. But I appreciate that. Thank you very much. Here's a few more ideas on the text line for a chili, which I think I'm going to make some homemade chili this week. Just with this cold weather, it's so good. I have a recipe that's posted on our TV website, WGNTV.com/DeanCooks. But so it's kind of a basic chili recipe. It's very delicious, but I got to say, some of the things that you are all suggesting here, I like the additions. Here's one that says, throw a hot tamale in your chili just before it's done. It really amps up the flavor. Okay, that sounds like a fantastic idea. Here is another one that says, Dean, I use all the spices that you mentioned as well as a little allspice and a couple of dashes of red wine. Whether I'm using ground or chunky beef, I always add a half a pound of ground hot Italian sausage and three kinds of beans, black beans, kidney beans, and Great Northern beans. All excellent suggestions. I am definitely going to try this hot Italian sausage. I love that idea, and I can only imagine how it must really enhance the flavor profile of the whole thing. So maybe with my chunks of beef, maybe some Italian sausage to go in there. I like the allspice idea as well. Little red wine never hurt anything, both in the pot and also in the chef. Thanks for all the suggestions.